Welcome to the Plant a Trillion Trees podcast. I'm Eva Monheim.
And I'm Hal Rosner. We are both certified arborists through the International Society of Arboriculture. The purpose of our podcast is to encourage tree planting and proper tree care for our urban forests, which include neighborhoods, parks, and other open spaces.
We will also cover a myriad of tree topics, including the important role trees play in relationship to the climate crisis. Thank you for joining us. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Monheim Microphones. Monheim Microphones designs and handcrafts top-tier studio microphones and preamps right here in the United States in Hollywood, California. Their incredible line of innovative microphones and designs are used around the world by everyone from podcasters to top-charting record producers and singers. They recently released their new royalty microphone, Monheim Microphones Unparalleled Excellence, monheimmicrophones.com.
Verdant Earth Educators provides dynamic in-person training and online learning opportunities for environmental and horticultural businesses. Owned by ISA-certified arborists and former university faculty, the Verdant Earth Educator team provides consultations on tree care and recommends climate-resilient opportunities for your valued green spaces. Verdant Earth Educators is all about seeding knowledge for success. Find Verdant Earth Educators at verdanteartheducators.com.
We wanted to do this special episode because we wanted to go over some of the really fantastic podcasts that we've had this year. And Hal and I have been talking about this for a while now. And just to help our listeners know what we try to do when we're making our selections of guests, we really scavenge the entire industry for what we don't call trends, but we call movements. And the reason why I say movements is trends actually end. It has the word end in it, where a movement actually is something that picks up slowly and continues to grow and grow over time. So that's why we thought we would have this special edition and talk about some of the things that we see coming down the line from the people that we've been talking to. Hal, I have a couple questions for you. So I wanted to get your feedback on some of the things that I've been picking up on. I wanted to find out if those are similar things that you're picking up on, or maybe you're picking up on something I'm not picking up on. One of the things that several of our guests have talked about are containers, the shift from a plastic container to either some type of fiber or some type of paper product that when the root hits that container, the root dries out and forces fibrous roots inward on the plant, creates a much heavier root system, and makes the plant easier to transplant from that container, but also grows faster because it has so much more food stored in the root systems. So, you know, what is your take on that? Do you think that that's something that we're going to see more of? I think it's a movement, but you know, maybe it's a trend. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I concur that it is a movement. And I think as we've learned over the years, our fourth year, by the way, is everything is interconnected, right? And we love that term, rhizomorphic networking, that plants do it. And maybe plants are teaching humans to do a better job of it. So in the case of the containers that you've talked about and the redesign, how is that connected to other speakers and other things we've talked about? Well, what comes to mind right away is seeds, seed shortages, seed collection, propagation. It goes on and on. So we're thinking about the dynamic interview that we had with Lars Jensen and the containers that they use, and that they ask their vendors as much as possible to reuse. They're selling a product that isn't meant to be thrown out. Either reuse it or send it back, and they'll make use of it again. And he kindly sent us some samples, and it's been terrific to look at what industry is doing to support propagation, and that it is an essential. The name of our podcast is Plant a Trillion Trees. A trillion trees, that means seeds, containers, logistics, and transportation. So Yeah, all coming back to that point, Eva, of our guests, whether they know it or not, and I think we're getting that sense when we look at the website of this interconnectedness, the networking. You and I talked before we started the recording of, I'm kind of just taken by the expressions. Everyone go to the website and have a look at the Plant a Trillion Trees website. Our guests not only have wonderful things to say, but they project a confidence and an optimism, a problem-solving dynamic. And Lars said it as a business person. He said, we're going to solve this problem. You know, this problem of how do we cool this planet using trees on a macro scale?
I think you're right about that. One of the things that I'm intrigued with that more and more people are trying his product. And we're not trying to push one product here, just so you know, we're not getting paid to
say. No, of course not.
We're seeing that, I don't know whether you know this or not, but you know, Proven Winners just came out with a paper pot. They're no longer using plastic. I can't applaud them enough for what they're doing. I get goosebumps thinking about it because they're so conscientious about the environment and the new products they deliver that need low maintenance, where you don't have to use power tools to maintain something. You can use a pair of hand snips, two cuts and you're done. Or plant material that doesn't grow so big that you have to constantly keep pruning it back. It stays small. These are the things that I'm thinking about as a movement, the idea that we have to be conscientious about the environment and what we're putting into it and
right.
How we can slow that down. And I think that that's so critical for the climate crisis. But also, I think of Ari Miller and his...
Ari Miller from the Hinge Collective.
Yes, from the Hinge Collective.
Ari's firm, along with his wife, Alexa Basse, put together the Philly tree plant.
Yeah.
Interconnectedness. And that what happened as a result is that Washington awarded the city of Philadelphia $12 million. $12 million targeted for the underserved Black and brown communities where canopy is sorely missing. And much, much hotter on a summer day in Philadelphia, in a neighborhood in Southwest Philly, North Philly, South Philly, blazing in the hot sun versus other neighborhoods that already have the benefit of full canopy. So our Philadelphia tree plan, as it's called, the Philly tree plan, you know, made that case that, and all of a sudden, Philadelphia is in the spotlight of delivering or at least ramping up their game. I want to make a sports analogy, but I won't, to restore and keep our parks and our street tree collection healthy and vital.
And I think what has come from this, and we keep seeing people that we've interviewed, I know we've done a lot of interviews from British Columbia, the University of British Columbia, and many of their people have come from Philadelphia. Numerous people have come from Philadelphia or have come here to see the programs that we have here and have taken them to British Columbia to utilize as part of their educational programming. That to me tells us a lot about Philadelphia and our ideas. We've always been an idea-rich city. And again, I think that the Philly Tree Plan is going to change how everyone views the importance of trees. It's not just the 30%. The 30% is how to save those 400 people that die a year in our city from heat exhaustion, from that excessive heat that is not being mitigated by trees.
That's right.
You know, somebody thought that it was a random number, 30%, but it's not. It's a health number. That's the health-based number for keeping people healthy within the city confined.
Yeah, I think 30% seems to be I want to almost say the standard. I noticed that New York City now moving forward with their planting initiatives are also going for that same 30% canopy.
Well, I just want to mention that I'm not sure how many people are aware of it, but the University of Pennsylvania has done a lot of studies here in Philadelphia with the health of mental health, physical health of community members, And they have confirmed that 30%. So it's not just a random number. The Kaplan and Kaplan's use their research back, and I think it was in the 80s, and I know Ulrich was back then also, where they were looking at the health of a community. And there are these different levels of standard, a standard base level for the human experience and how that physical body can maintain good health if you have a certain standard of green around people, whether it's for mental health, physical health, emotional health. People don't even think about the emotional part of it. You know, when a tree comes down, people get very emotional. Of course they get emotional because they're attached to it. It's just like losing your dog or your pet or your parent.
So let's play that game again, or referencing back to interconnectedness, and you talked the emotional attachment when a tree is removed, and I've certainly seen that happen many times. It seems like it takes us in another direction a little bit towards urban wood, right? Urban wood reclamation. And we've had some guests on.
Yes. Yeah,
we've learned so much from the people at the Urban Wood Network. I think we recently tallied up six different guests at least, that came on to talk about repurposing wood that's coming out of the urban forest, saving it from the tub grinder, saving it from conversion to mulchy wood chip products, and instead milling it and coming up with multiple uses, whether it be framing or ornamental additions to the garden or fine furniture. We've heard some lovely stories, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that tree that the kids had their swing on, had it to come down, and it was made into a table for the family to eat around. I just get goosebumps when I hear stories like that, because it's a very thankful picture to me that the tree that they played on, now they're eating around.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How much better can that get?
So that is clearly a movement, right? Urban wood reclamation. Bye-bye wood chips. Bye-bye landfill. Instead, guests have talked about the need to have every major urban center needs to have, whether it is in the public or private sector, a milling operation to handle wood. And it doesn't have to be the big hardwoods of the eastern forests. We had guests on from New Mexico that were milling, you know, small pieces of mesquite and cedar outside of Albuquerque and Taos, New Mexico. How cool is that?
Yeah, and I think that's the creative part of the people in that region of the country. And Wow.
Well, let me jump in with a couple more just to whet the appetite of our listeners. Is in terms of movements, Eva, you had the opportunity to look at some data that one of our streaming services offered us. And it does look like tiny forests are only gaining in momentum. And from the rhizomorphic networking, I'm looking forward to commercial landscapers saying tiny forests are a service we need to offer our guests in terms of not coming in and rolling out sod and putting in flower beds of annuals, but instead creating these sustainable environments that use a lot less, if not no, fossil fuels, attract pollinators, reduce level of maintenance, and create seasonal interest. And though tiny forest is hypnotically wonderful in a metaphysical sense, what happens when you plant a collection of trees and woodies in, you know, in close proximity to each other? And that was a movement and a trend and one of our most popular shows this year with Hannah Lewis talking about the Miyawaki method.
It was listened to 352% more than the other podcasts. Does that tell you?
Wow, you did a great job quoting that.
I just couldn't believe it. Just could not believe it. And I know I get asked by students all the time, can you give me links to Miyawaki?
Yeah.
And I said, absolutely. When I give them the podcast and when I give them other links from the external, different websites that I've been on, they're absolutely blown away.
And her book was terrific, too.
Her book's terrific. Yeah, yeah. The thing about Miyawaki started as like a little trend, but then it shifted into a movement. We interviewed way back when Don, I think is how you pronounce his first name, from the Netherlands, early on, who was doing tiny forests in the Netherlands around big cities because the children in those cities rarely, if ever, got into a woods or never went to a woods or never were in nature. So planting these tiny forests around these big cities has motivated these children to want to go into these woodlands and to really create them in their schools. So, you know, a couple years ago when we interviewed him, and now we can actually see that trend shift to a movement. That movement is catching on, and people realize that they can save their small seedlings and create a little woodland on their own property. That's exciting. And if you do have seedlings in your flower beds that are growing up and you have another place on the property where you have, you know, a space that might be green lawn that maybe doesn't need to be mowed, put your plants there. Try them. Put them into a grouping. It doesn't have to be real big. It could be 2 feet by 2 feet, or it could be 3 feet by 3 feet. And just plant as many as you can close together and see what happens. These are the kind of things that we really need to do more of. And it's those kind of small, tiny forests that are going to be able to capture carbon quickly. And they're also going to be able to mature quickly too, because they are working together as an orchestrated unit to create that new forest. Most people think that trees grow solitary in a forest, but they don't. They're actually working and connecting, interconnecting their root systems and their rhizome, the rhizomorphic network that actually does feed each other. They actually feed each other. And
yep.
You know that from Suzanne Smart's book, The Finding the Mother Tree, where a tree will actually give out energy if they have too much of it or they have extra, and they'll give it to surrounding trees, even if it's not their own species, you know? So that's kind of interesting.
A lot of good stuff. I'd like to ask our listeners to, if you're a regular or if you've referred, first of all, thank you for listening. Never hesitate to give us feedback on the website. And also, if you ever have any ideas in terms of sponsorship, we would love to hear from you, because we know you're out there and we appreciate putting these shows together. And it never hurts to make it a little bit fundable at this end.
The other thing that I want to mention is that people who write in on our website, I receive your emails, and I have lists of people that have been recommended by listeners to have as guests. Some of them we've already had as guests, but we are always looking for new guests. So if you have a great person that you think should be on, I just received one today, as a matter of fact, from the West Coast. So we are listening. We do look at our email, and I don't want you to think we forgot about you. If you don't hear from us right away, shoot us an email. You could find my email and Hal's email on our website, theplantatrilliontreespodcast.com, and send us an email. We're happy to accommodate.
That's it. Thanks so much for listening. And Eva, thanks for your insights. I feel so gratified, and I'll leave it at that.
I feel the same, Hal. I feel like we kind of have masterclassed our everyday interviews. So, yeah, thank you for listening. The Plant a Trillion Trees podcast is edited by Andromeda Recordings in Hollywood, California. Thank you.